Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 36. I was on the fence about pregnancy and all I heard was, lacking some maternal instinct, are we? And you'll never understand true love unless you have children. Now I'm pregnant though, it's your weekend lions will never be the same, you know. Oh yeah, I do know, thanks. But despite deciding to baby, there's still so much more to find out from both camps. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network where I chat to baby wanters, baby rejecters and everything in between to see why we decide to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I chat to Tim, a recently widowed father of one.
I hadn't let it be a surprise. I'd said, you know, well, mummy's getting worse. And so when I walked in, we both were suddenly able to breathe in a, you know what, mummy's not suffering anymore.
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and best friend, Camilla.
Hello.
Hi. Now, we need to do a big fat, this is emotional warning at the start of this episode, which we've talked about.
Definitely
before.
Take a deep breath before listening.
Now, here's the situation, right? So I record these podcasts because of lockdown and everything. Before that all happened, obviously, I would just go to people's houses and I'd sit and have a chat with them. And now I record it sitting in a wardrobe. And here's what happened. When I recorded the podcast, I did it sitting in a wardrobe and I did not bring tissues, which was an error.
Did you have to wipe your face on like pieces of clothing? Like, oh, I don't like that dress that much.
No, but I think
you should
I just
have done that.
I think I just was a bit snivelly throughout. So I just would like to apologise for any kind of snotty, snivelly sound effects that are potentially to come. And I would also like to say to you, wherever you may be listening to this podcast, please have tissues.
Mm-hmm.
Camilla, did you have tissues?
Actually, no, I didn't. Oh. I did have baby wipes. But they just made me wetter on the face.
Now, obviously, normally in these interviews, there are little breaks in between where we chat or I will say some ridiculous anecdote about my pregnancy. But we felt like because of the nature of this interview and with it being a little bit more sensitive and a little bit more emotional, we aren't doing that. So the next voice that you hear will be Tim and we'll just let it roll. Tissues at the ready.
Hi, well, my name is Tim Brown. I am 40-something, the lower end of 40-something. I am a dad to a 11-year-old girl called Mayana. And earlier this year in February, sadly, my wife died, which obviously left me without a wife and Mayana, my daughter, without a mum. So for the last 5 months, we've been getting our heads around that. The reality is it's probably been a bit longer than that because the nature of her illness is that for a long time, I've had to take the lead on some of these things. So, yeah, 5 months, but it feels a lot longer.
Do you know what? And this is awful, Tim. So I came across your account, and I don't know how I came across it on Instagram.
Yeah.
And it was only when I contacted you to say, you know, would you like to come and do the podcast that I realised how recent it was.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I think I quite casually in my description on Instagram say, widower and pandemic. Sounds like some Hollywood movie. I mean, nobody could have foreseen how 2020 has kind of unravelled. For me, going into the year, I knew what the landscape looked like a little bit. I knew that my wife was ill and we were heading towards the kind of the end. But yeah, I think nobody could have seen quite what it looked like after that in terms of lockdown and all the effect that just has on normal. So yeah, it's been 5 months, but it feels a lot longer.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. So first off, let's rewind all the way back. So your wife is Jem. Yep. So I did this podcast because I was fanning around deciding, do I definitely want to have kids? I think I do, but then do I? And so what was your situation in terms of being together and deciding, yes, we want to have a family?
Yeah, I mean, we got married in 2005. And we both come from homes with, you know, we both got a brother and sister, so we're both one of three. I think very early we were very much like, yeah, we want to have kids. And then there was a bit of a season of trying. Mayana was born in 2009, so we're probably talking, you know, what, 4 years, 3.5 years after being married. When Mayana was actually born, the birth was quite traumatic. You know, it was a long induction, and we then had a very long labor, which resulted in emergency cesarean, which then resulted in my wife, Jem, having some complications, which meant she had to go into intensive care immediately and needed 29 units of blood, which when your body only has 9 units generally, yeah.
Crikey.
So that was a somewhat traumatic start to parenting, and I was left quite early on. I was left with Mayana, and I remember doing the first Marmite nappy and being like, okay, we've got this. So that's where we were. You know, fortunately, my wife recovered after a short hospital stay. But that probably then left us with it meant that, you know, having any more would be a slightly more complicated scenario.
Actually, predominantly, the people that I talk to on this podcast are the mums, and it's their experience of childbirth and not how the partner feels in that scenario, seeing the love of their life and the future mother of their children go through this, and in your case, horrific, it must have been super scary, scenario. So what is it like?
Yeah, I mean, I think back then I'd refer to it as the best and the worst day of my life in one go, where on one hand I'm holding my daughter for the first time, and then within minutes it's clear that my wife isn't quite right and there needs to be some intervention. So I take the baby to a room and I'm with her, and understandably there's obviously certain controls about babies being with mothers, and so I'm kind of being chaperoned a little bit, and you know, Jem's mum was with me, and you know, my dad kind of rushed over, and I think I probably let out one of the loudest wails of kind of despair, where one of the consultants came in and said, look, we may have to do a hysterectomy. And I'm like, what? You know, in one hand I'm seeing life and, you know, parenting and my daughter, and then within a few hours I'm saying, you know, that might be it. I just let out this kind of guttural kind of wail of like, what? Where is this at? And we got to the other side of that, and you know, life being a parent and being parents progressed as such, but it started with a flurry, it's fair to say.
Yeah, it really did. And what a scare. So fast forward down the line, when things presumably had gotten to, and I hate the term normal, so I'm using it very much in inverted commas. Yeah, yeah. But things have got back to normal and you're doing normal parenting, family life, and then Jem gets this diagnosis. So what happened?
So late 2017, we got the news that there was something wrong with Jem's abdomen. A few months earlier, she randomly out of nowhere had a pulmonary embolism, so where you get kind of blood clots on the lungs. And then in their scanning of the chest to kind of see, has this cleared, they noticed a little bit of fluid on the abdomen. And so they're like, look, we need to get this checked. And on a Friday night, the doctor rang and said, look, I've got your results and I'm seeing you on Monday, but do you want to know now? And they flagged it quite soon and said, look, you know, we think this is this strange cancer. And I also have to get the words right here. It's called pseudomyxoma peritonei, or PMP. And it's basically just a jelly that fills your abdomen and fills it and fills it and fills it and fills it. And so fortunately for us, we're based in Sandhurst, Camberley, and Basingstoke is one of the only two national centres where they do the procedure, this operation. It's called cytoreduction, where basically they open you up and take it all out. And so mid-October in 2017, Jem went in for this procedure, probably only 3 or 4 weeks after the first mention of cancer. And the procedure is such that they go in and they try and take out as much of the jelly that they could. They took out 6 liters of jelly, which,
blimey.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair amount. But also what they have to do is any organs where the jelly is stuck to, if they're not essential, then they will take them out as well. And so some of the names I don't know, but there was about 9 or 10 organs that were taken out at that point. Things like the spleen. She lost her large intestines. She had to have a full hysterectomy. It's like, you know, we want to get all of this out, because if we don't get it out, it's going to grow again, and we're going to find ourselves in this issue again. Fortunately, they were able to get out 95% of the jelly. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get 5% of it out. And so there was a lot attached to her small intestines. You can't live without that. So therefore, you can take some of it out and they shorten it, but it's still on there. So they, you know, they came in mid-operation and said, look, we've done the best we can here. I mean, these are kind of, you know, the best surgeons in the world that are doing this job. And they've gone in and done the best job they can. And they said, we've only been able to get 95% out. And that, at that point, you're like, so it's coming back one day. And they said, we think she's got years, not months. But you are kind of faced with an immediate, like, okay, this hasn't gone to plan. There's then several more hours of surgery that Jem's got to do. And then she's waking up in intensive care. And I remember that next morning going into her in intensive care. And even through the drugs and everything, she's looking at me with a face that says, did we get it? Did they get it all? Did they get it all? And we were like, the surgeon's got to be the one that explains what's happening to it. But you know what? As a husband, you can't hide your face. And so the clock started to tick a little bit. And you're kind of like, well, where do we go with this? What does it happen with this? At that point, I started a series of counseling that basically say, look, I've got to make sure I'm all right. I foresaw a day two and a half years ago. It's like the good chances there's going to come a day here where Jem dies. And I can't be a mess at that point. I wasn't being harsh on myself. I could. I'm more than happy to break down and cry and sob and get the emotion out whenever I need to. But I took the decision that said, look, I want to start this process now. I want to be in the best place I can so that when that news is dropped on us later, I've read the next page. I've read the next chapter. When Mayana asks me questions for the first time, I've already kind of thought through my answer and thought through my response. And so when we get to difficult times, difficult questions, it feels like I'm a few pages along. After about a year, it was clear that actually the jelly was beginning to grow again. And so they started a season of chemotherapy that finished early 2018. And then they kind of said, look, we're running out of options here. And we spoke to our guys again in Basingstoke and they said, look, there is another option. It's only happened 13 times in the world. And it happens in Oxford, which is obviously just down the road from us, where the option would be you would have a full intestinal transplant. And so they would give you a new small intestines. They'd give you a bit of your new large intestines. They'd give you a bit of new stomach. And you're like, well, yeah, let's go for this. And so, and then she went on the waiting list. Throughout that, they're doing tests on her to kind of see where she's at. And it was clear that she was kind of deteriorating at that point. And there would come a point where it's like, you know what? You're now too sick to be on the transplant list. And so in November of last year, we went up to Oxford and they did a CT scan. And there it showed that actually there was now something going on in the chest. And so in mid-November, they then said, right, this is it. There is nothing more we can do. This is going to kill you. They said at that point, it's like, you know, we think you are probably talking weeks, not months. Jem in her wonderful, I don't want to use the word stubbornness, but you know, there was a defiance that said, you know what? We actually never said to Jem that. We actually made decisions like, you know what? I don't want to say to my wife, you've got weeks. It's like, you know what? There is a time scale out there. And she went for about 4 months. And that was, we got to do some good things in that time. Just after Christmas, she went into Woking Hospice, who, list of heroes, whew, they're near the top. But yeah, then mid-February, she died. And that brings us to, well, 5 months ago. So that's that story.
As you were telling me the story, I'm welling up because I just, what a roller coaster, because you have had this glimmer, this thing that's saying maybe we can win the race, and to then find out that you can't.
Yeah.
Even though a part of you must have also preempted that day might come, I don't know how you deal with that personally, but also, you know, how do you deal with that with your child? Because I was going to ask you earlier, you know, how much did you tell Mayana through the process of everything that was going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think we took the decision quite early in our, how we would talk to Mayana, is that actually I never wanted Mayana to be able to come back to us or to myself and say, you didn't tell me that, you said something else. I think the phrase I always use to Mayana is like, I will give you the truth, however brutal it is, I will give you the headlines, but I might not give you the whole article. You know, so after the initial operation 2.5 years ago, I remember taking my Anna out for a hot chocolate and saying, look, it hasn't gone as well as we thought. It hasn't gone as well as we had hoped. This is what it may mean. And we told her, obviously, in the 4 weeks prior to that, we'd said, look, you know, mummy's got this cancer and mummy's going to have this operation. And, you know, there's a risk in the operation. And then, understandably, you know, post-operation, when Jem's in intensive care in HDU, it's just not appropriate to bring an 8-year-old, 7-year-old into those environments too early on when there's tubes and things coming out of everywhere. So you're kind of, you're telling her the truth, but you are shielding her at the same time. You're saying, look, I'm not giving you the reality of everything. And I still remember the beautiful moment of the first time Mayana came in to see Jem, and Jem's spirit lifted and she's like, right, I'm going to be mummy for the next half hour and give everything I've got. And actually, Mayana just coming in, just, it just acted like medicine in itself and kind of like, hey, you're here. And the cuddle, although fragile, was beautiful and poignant.
Like, how did she handle it? How much, I mean, particularly early on, how much do you think she kind of understood? Or I don't want to sound like that's patronizing because obviously she I imagine she did understand, but you know, how much did she get it?
Yeah, it's one of those times. Mayana is a bright kid. She's very studious. She takes her studies. She enjoys to learn. She has an appetite for learning, and that's meant that she has a good understanding of where things are at. It's the last 2.5 years, her emotional intelligence has had to, when you say she's had to grow up, you know, it's like in those areas, she's had to process hearing the, like, you know, your mummy's got cancer, she might die. And you've just got to be there to let her process it in her way, let her ask the questions in her way, give the appropriate answers. You can't give false hope. You can't say, oh yeah, no, Mayana, everything is going to be fine. Because if and when it wasn't, I've got to be able to take her to the darkest place now and the reality of today, so that she knows that, you know what my dad is telling me is true. What my dad is telling me is as it is, and I can trust that. Whilst that was crazy hard for her to hear, it meant that in future times, she was able to trust what I was saying. And I can hold you through it, and I can sit by your bedside at every bedtime and talk you through it and give what assurances you can. You know, I can't as a dad equally say, you know what, yeah, but I'll always be fine. You know, I'll always be here. I've made a point of never saying that. When in mid-February, I was with Jem in the hospice when she died, and then Mayana had a play date at a friend's, and, you know, I walked into the play date and she knew immediately, because why would your dad be here if it wasn't for this?
Yeah.
But you know what? It wasn't a surprise, because I hadn't let it be a surprise. I'd said, you know, well, mummy's getting worse. We'd been in, it was a Tuesday. We'd been in on the Saturday and Sunday. She could see. And the night before, she'd probably asked and said, is mummy going to die tomorrow? And I said, yeah, she might. And so when I walked in, it wasn't a surprise. And that, in the purest possible sense of this, we both were suddenly able to breathe in a, you know what, mummy's not suffering anymore. We have a strong Christian faith, and we're like, you know what, we believe mummy is in heaven now. We believe she's okay, she's at peace, she is comfortable. And I was able to hold her and cuddle her and, you know, just do everything you can to love. And to her, you know, to her credit, some time then passed and she was like, you know what, Dad? I was like, right, should we go? And she's like, no, I want to stay and play with my friend. I'm like, but for me, that was like, you know what? I just need a bit of normal. I just need to do what 10-year-old girls do. And it's just doing silly dances on TikTok or whatever, or just watching YouTube. And, you know, later that day I picked her up and we spent time talking it through. And, you know, I moved my mattress into her bedroom, so, you know, I was kind of there so she'd wake up and I'd be there, and there was a comfort in that she knew I wasn't too far away. Simon Thomas, the Sky Sports presenter who wrote the book Love Interrupted, I read that almost as a manual through a lot of this season, of where obviously his wife Gemma died, within months, actually, of when Jem was first diagnosed, and he's got a son, Ethan. And a lot of the things that he had gone through, almost he was walking this a few months ahead of me. I remember he said, look, you know, I just moved my bed into Ethan's bedroom and I was there. So he was able to know, it's like, look, you know what, you know, your dad's here. If you wake up in the night, I'm here. If you wake up in the morning, I'm here. It's obviously very obvious who isn't there, but it's like, look, I am here. I'm going to help you in this.
But in a way for you, was it also nice for you to wake up and know that Mayana was there?
Yeah, absolutely. Although it was 5 months ago, Jem died. For the last 2 months, she was in the hospice. And so we were living at home again, just me and Mayana. So we had begun to adjust to a reality of, okay, it's me and you here and just how we do things. And probably the level of cleaning had gone down a little bit, but you know, that's just our reality. One of the perverse benefits of Jem being ill was the way my relationship with Mayana flourished, because you know, Mayana had to cling to the one which she thought was most stable, and so our relationship developed and our relationship grew, and almost she would come to me with her questions before she came to mummy with them, and now, you know, another kind of half year on, we're living in the blessing of that we do. I haven't had to get to know my daughter. You know, I know my daughter. Sometimes as a dad with a son, you assume that you know exactly what they want to do. And you're like, right, we're going to play football. We're going to make a den. We're going to wrestle. We're going to get muddy. We're going to play with sticks. Because that's my reference point of being a boy. I've got, randomly, I've got no reference point of being a girl. And so that, as a dad, you have to take that line of like, you know what? I need to invest myself in your world. You know, I can still sing the theme tune to Sophia the First and all of the Disney songs. I'm not going to, but I can. I have to invest myself in her world because that's what she understands. And so, you know, yeah, I can probably name all the Disney princesses and all of their musical sidekicks and everything like that. And the nature of daughters is they will often want to learn a little bit about your world as well. And she, you know, occasionally we might play FIFA on the PlayStation and you'd set it up to be a really easy mode and she would rejoice in it. But I made the decision to, you know what, I want to learn your world. I want to understand what makes you work as a girl because I've never had that. We watched an awful film recently. It was great for her. It was some dancing thing. It's kind of, not, it wasn't, but it's like High School Musical type thing.
Okay. It's one of my favourites, Tim.
Well, High School Musical, yeah, mate. I mean, as in this podcast, we are all in this together and all those things. But yep. Anyway, this film was awful. It was like B-list Netflix something, but she loved it. And actually, I wouldn't choose to watch it by myself at all. But now where our world is just me and her, that's still kind of the norm. And so I don't force her to play football and have fights in the woods and sticks and muds and all those things. Although Nerf guns we tried for a little bit. That didn't go well. So, yeah, I'll do that for as long as she'll have me.
Yeah. Do you have ways of kind of still keeping Jem alive?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the pictures stay up. The memories are still very strong. We, as for my job and kind of a hobby, I do a lot of photography. And so we made a photo book for 2018, which was a year where we had some ups and downs. We went on a most incredible holiday to Florida as the whole family and all of Jem's family and did all the Disney thing and just embraced life in its way. And so we made a photo book of that and we made a photo book of the year for Christmas this last year, again, through kind of tears pouring down my face and snot running down my face making this thing. I basically went through all of the pictures I'd ever had of Jem and Mayan and just made a photo book kind of from like 0 to 10. And they got to open it and go through it together and share those memories. And we've still got that. And we can still occasionally open it up and, you know, some of those memories will be laughing at each of their expenses of when Mayana did something silly or when mummy did something silly. But you can also use it as a, almost like as a framework of like, oh, do you remember that? Go back to that. You know, videos and cameras and things. But we, this weekend we were with Jem's family and obviously celebrating birthday. And I think Jem remains in our conversation massively. I think in my card to Mayana at the weekend I wrote, she's a perfect mix of mummy's amazingness and daddy's kind of loud craziness, which is a poignant combo. And she's she is amazing, crazy and loud. And, you know, one of the things Gemma always said to me, Aunt, was like, look, just be kind. And that's flipping hard work sometimes for a 10-year-old going through school, being the kid that has got stuff going on.
Yeah.
And choosing to be kind. She learned from her mum massively in terms of empathy and kindness.
Tim, you've absolutely
destroyed me. It's a soggy one today, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, blimey. But do you know what? I think it's probably the first podcast interview that I've done where I have been crying really sad tears, but also smiling at the same time, and you making me laugh with some of the stories that you've told about you and about Gem and about Mayana. So
yeah, and this is at the start of the year, Gem was in the hospice, and everybody was like, "Oh, happy New Year!" And I'm like, "Really? I know my wife's going to die this year, but again, I can't put that on. I can't flip back, and you just play along. Yeah, happy New Year." And Mayana kind of pulled up on it, and it's like, "But it's not going to be a happy New Year, is it?" And it's like, and we were like, "Oh, crappy New Year!" And then suddenly we were like, "Well, actually, I've always chosen throughout our journey, be it with our family and our friends and our church community who have held us and supported us throughout, of being putting the truth out there and saying, look, this is exactly where we're at. And often I would write big, long emails of like, you know, this is exactly what's happening. And that was helpful. But I think I found with the Instagram quite early, it's like, you know, people wanted to know on a daily basis, like, how's Gem doing? How's Gem doing? And it was a decision to be like, look, you know, we're going to, you know, actually, some days, even in the midst of it, we're going to choose to have happy days. And we're going to, you know, there is a whole lot of crap going on, but actually we're going to choose to celebrate the happy things. Quite early in our journey, you know, when it became clear, it's like, okay, Gem, you're not coming home from the hospice. This is kind of where we're at. It took her a bit of while to get around that. And partly, I can never really understand from her angle, it's like, not that you ever give up, but when do you actually accept that reality of like, this is it. This is, I'm not going home. And we were able to talk that through and work that out and make the decision together about where the best place for that would be. But there comes a point when you get past that acceptance of, well, actually, this is it, where you can begin to embrace some other things. And so we, on the 13th of January, we did Mayana's 10 and a half birthday because it was clear she wasn't going to make it to 11. She wasn't going to make it to 11th birthday. So we did a 10 and a half birthday. And I think the hospice were a little bit shocked because, you know, from the balcony, we were suddenly popping champagne corks. I mean, that's not normally what you do in a hospice, but they were like, no, this is great. This is, you're embracing life. And so we did it a 10 and a half birthday. My Gem's brothers and his wife were expecting their firstborn. And Gem was like, I just want to make it to May so I can meet my niece. And it's like, babe, you're not gonna, so let's do a baby shower. So in the, you know, 2 days later we did a baby shower in the hospice again. The champagne corks are popping everywhere, and people are like, what is going on in room one? This isn't right. And to be fair, the hospice kind of picked up on it, and I did a bit of an interview with them and said, look, you know, the desire to choose hope, to choose not to irrationally cling to it, but to be like, look for the positive, to look for the happy in the crappy and things, and look for the kind of the, well, where's the good stuff here? Where's the stuff that we can really cling to? We chose to do hospice life a bit differently. And so, you know, it would often be a case of we would be hunting around for empty chairs. I think we got up to like 16 people in a room one night. And I'm so, so grateful of the season we were able to do that in at the start of the year. If it had been a couple of months later when kind of COVID lockdown had started, we wouldn't have been able to appropriately mourn together and grieve together. So Gem's funeral, it was like, you know, standing room only, kind of 300, 400 people. If that had been 10 days later, it would have been 10 people. You know, Gem was loved by many, and that would have almost robbed some people of their ability to grieve and mourn and process this. It was heartbreaking when I went to the creme to pick up the ashes, where we had standing room only in the creme. Suddenly there was a family of 10 and you're like, this feels so wrong. What we have found for me and Mayana during lockdown is, yes, it is crazy and yes, it is weird. And we, We had planned to go on a 3-week escape to South Africa to basically dial back, you know, just spend time together, take life slower and kind of recuperate. And actually travel restrictions came in and we didn't get to do that. But what through lockdown we have also had is Mayana was off school for, you know, 10, 12 weeks at home. And so every day we were together and life slowed down. You know, we watched the entire series of Friends from start to finish and we were watching Glee and all these things. And actually it gave us a season of coming back to simplistic. Like it sounds weird to say there is an element of this lockdown where I am grateful for what it has meant for me and Mayana, that actually we've had to, it's kind of concentrated our relationship again and said, look, you know, actually you've got each other and you've got to work out how to do life with just each other and given you this micro world, which will become the reality. You know, she's now finished primary school this last weekend and she's had her first birthday without Jem this last weekend and big, huge emotional things, but we've been able to work through them together. And in a few weeks, we're moving house and then she's starting secondary school. So there's these big, big, huge things going on. But actually, you know, we can still enjoy life together. So yesterday we went to Chessington for the day and there were screams of delight and there were moments of real, genuine happy. I made the comment that it was the funeral I had enjoyed most in my life, which is weird in a lot of ways to say, how can you enjoy your wife's funeral? But it, for me, was a perfect balance of Jem, her faith in Jesus and kind of celebrating what we believe there, but also just being with our friends together. And everybody was saying the same things. And it was a celebration of like, you lived an incredible life. Mm. And we're going to choose to celebrate it. That's no way me saying, you know what, I've completed grief. You've heard from the sogginess of this. That the moments that hit me the most are moments of empathy for Mayana, of what she won't have. And yeah, I grieve for what I have lost. But, you know, what Mayana has lost is, I see it as greater. But we are doing okay. We are doing well. We are looking for the good things. We are looking for the hope.
So I'd just like to say after that interview, what a fantastic husband and father Tim must be. Because I just think to be able to make the decision to go to counselling when it's, you know, you don't know when it's going to happen, but it is going to happen. Mm. And to do that for yourself, but solely for your child, it's just unreal. And just everything that he talked about, like the things that he's done with Mayana since, just absolutely amazing. It must be the hardest thing to navigate your own grief.
Yeah.
As well as your child's.
I completely agree. So if you want to follow Tim, and honestly, his Instagram is called @HappyCrappyNewYear, which obviously he mentions in the interview, which I feel is very appropriate. And, you know, he talks about hope. And I feel like when you look at his Instagram, you really feel that hope. And of course there is grief and of course there is sadness. But even like I said in the interview, you know, I was crying, but then I was crying like and feeling so flipping sad. But then he would also make me laugh and feel happy and honestly, all the emotions. But you talk about counselling as well. And one of the things that he wanted me to mention was a charity called Daisy's Dream, who help children and their families through bereavement. So they act as like a counselling service. So obviously he talked about going for his own counselling, but he talked about how Daisy's Dream was there for Mayana throughout and how important that is. And so I think the fact that he was so proactive in taking care of himself in order to be able to take care of others is super admirable. And I know we always say how much we love the guests and everything, but what a guy.
Yeah, like what a guy. And I just think the fact that he, like, you know, people talk about social media and bad mouth it and stuff. And yes, there is some horrific stuff out there. There's horrible trolls and all that kind of thing. But equally, for someone to share something so personal and to reach out and connect with other people who may have been through something similar, that is hope for everyone. And he's just, yeah, fantastic. What a guy.
Absolutely. And if, like us, you have snivelled your way through this episode of the podcast, I promise you next episode is not going to be anywhere near as emotional, so you will be relieved to know that. But please do go and find Tim at Happy Crappy New Year on Instagram and show him all the love, because I feel like he truly deserves it. Follow my journey and tell us about your own on social media. We are at Tababy or Not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it hugely help us out, but it will guarantee that you can always find a little bit of laughter amongst those sad tears.
Next time on Tababy or Not Tababy.
It's not a biological instinct of maternal desire. It's just a choice. And like any other choice on this planet, choose wisely.
Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.